This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 240 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, July 6, 2016. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, what's up, my main man? How's your 4th of July weekend?
Very good. Got a lot of work done and managed to actually go to the beach for the first time since you were out here. So that was nice. Definitely a good thing.
That's not. I mean, it's within a stone's throw of your house practically, so you better go to the beach.
Yeah, it was. It was nice. They had some World War II planes flying over and doing all kinds of cool formations and stuff, so it's a good time.
Indeed it was. So we've been talking about this show for a long time, and in fact, it's a big night tonight because the guest on our show, Marcus, I think you're actually going to reward it to him. But let me start off by saying that this gentleman was born and raised in Houston, Texas, and his name is Matt Mulloway. He is the CEO of Automattic, the co-founder of the open source software project known as WordPress, and the founder of the WordPress Foundation. And Matt, thank you very much for joining us again on WordPress Weekly.
Howdy, howdy. It's always good to be back.
And before we get started, Marcus, why don't you give Matt here the honorary title that we usually hand out to people who are special people that receive this title.
Yeah, it's actually handed out to multiple guest appearances, so you've earned it. You've been on the show with us with at least three times, with Jeff and myself, and I think two others besides that, which deems you the title Friend of the Show. Congratulations.
Woohoo!
Yeah, you know, we figured I've been doing the show for so long, you know, we got to give like a special title to people who've been on multiple times. So, Friend of the Show it is.
Episode 240?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, and just imagine, I took, remember way back in the day when I had you on and we talked about one of my first major interviews with you in the WordPress community is was back on, I think, TalkShoe, and we were using that crappy sounding phone bridge technology, and it was about the time when you removed a lot of themes from the theme directory because they were doing, I think they had some spam links in them or they were violating the GPL, and that was a big tussle in the WordPress community. So I actually invited you on the show, and you obliged, and that was sort of like a stepping stone for me in the WordPress community. That was a pretty cool time.
Those are the days.
Yeah, those were the days indeed. So, a lot of times when we have you on the show, we're going to talk about this is just, there's no order to these questions. It's just ask anything, pretty much, from me and Marcus to you. But before we get started, earlier this year, your father passed away, which Marcus and I talked about on the show, and we do now, and all our listeners pass our condolences on to you and your family. But I wanted to know, how are you coping with this loss, and has it affected anything you do or think about on a day-to-day basis?
Ah, that's a tough one. Yes, it affects everything I do every day, and I would say, you know, I'm still struggling a lot with it, so it's not really something that I feel like I've coped with yet.
Yeah, and, you know, it's I've had the privilege of meeting your sister, who is a wonderful woman. I believe I've met your mother. I can't remember if I met your father, and I didn't really know much about your father, but when I read your touching post and his obituary, it was easy for me to see where your interest in technology and jazz music came from, and it sounded like your father was a wonderful man.
Yeah, very much so. Really a huge influence on me, and still continues to be.
So, coping with that kind of loss is pretty difficult. So, I hope you managed to get through it. But so let's get into some WordPress stuff here. And the first thing we want to talk about with you is the WordPress Foundation. Just is there anything new going on with it? Are there any new programs you're working on or outreach programs you could tell us about?
No, nothing too new with the foundation, except the big switch that we did just a few months ago, which was changing how WordCamps work. Do you know that one?
Yeah, so instead of all the money being funneled, sponsorship money being funneled through a nonprofit entity, which placed quite a few restrictions on what sponsors could and couldn't do at these events. Now the money is, I think it's a B Corp, something to that effect, it's a for-profit entity, which really opens the door for sort of lessens the restrictions on what sponsors can and can't do at these events now.
Exactly. Basically, we're trying to increase flexibility for WordCamp organizers so they can put together just the best events possible without having to worry about necessarily, you know, the restrictions of the U.S. tax code for nonprofit entities, especially since all WordCamps are run in a nonprofit way anyway.
And going back to the WordPress Foundation, I know it's been around now for a few years. Was this your first foray into or your first really experience of managing and running your own nonprofit? And what sort of difficulties have you managed to overcome since founding it?
Yeah, well, in the early days, you know, it was definitely my first, although I'm on the board of another nonprofit called grist.org, which is an environmental journalism website, which is actually now powered by WordPress. It didn't used to be when I joined, but now it is. Yeah, applying for the nonprofit status, the 501c status, as an open source project was actually a little bit tricky, which is part of why, from the very beginning, the WordPress Foundation has had a strong educational bent. And WordCamps have been such a big part of that, because really a foundation isn't just about, you know, in the WordPress world, you'd probably say the most important thing it does is hold the trademark. And it's true that it's very important, and copyright and things like that, but beyond that, the educational component in terms of like some of the outreach programs, some of the money we've passed on to other nonprofits, particularly ones bringing underrepresented minorities into coding or learning about WordPress, and WordCamps themselves, which of course are well documented, have been, I think, very high impact.
I know Jen Milo was working on establishing some really cool outreach programs, I think, through the foundation for minorities and especially an interest towards women and getting more women involved with technology and creating programs like that. But she recently moved on. She's no longer at Automatic. Is there anyone that you know of has sort of taken her place and is working on creating different outreach programs for the foundation now?
Oh, absolutely. I would say that's still an issue and mission very close to our heart. And you know, inside Automatic, there's a whole team that focuses on sort of .org and community stuff. It's actually called internally the TARDIS team as a homage to, I believe, Doctor Who. And, they've got some pretty cool stuff in the pipeline and also have been doing, I think, some excellent work in terms of enabling WordCamps to grow. You know, seeing, I think it was 2,200 or 2,400 people at WordCamp Europe, like, really blew my mind. Like, if you watch that video,
yes.
I was visibly shocked and surprised walking in that room. It was really something.
Yeah, the first words out of your mouth when you took a seat was, wow. and as you watch that video, the opening scene of your Q&A with Brian Krausgaard is amazing because it's from the very top in the back. So you get to see 2,200 people in front of you. And I, you know, now that you mention it.
They were all in the room. I think there were a couple of rooms.
Oh, really?
Still, yeah.
Oh, wow. Because for a second there, I thought that was 2,200 just stacked all the way back like a rectangle.
It does look like a lot, yeah.
Man, 2,200 people. But, that looked like a great event. And the stream was awesome. It was like I was there when I watched it from here.
You sound like Dimension Media.
Shout out to
my favorite Twitter account.
Yeah, David Bissett.
David Bissett, yeah. Who actually sent me some really excellent feedback afterwards, after the talk.
Oh, nice.
I'm always trying to, you know, get better and improve at everything, but including public speaking, since that's a big part of what I do. And I figured who better would know about, like, he's probably seen me speak more than anyone in the world. And so I reached out to David and was like, hey, you know, based on what you saw, what would your feedback be? And he sent back a really excellent note that I've taken to heart and will work at for the next one.
How about that? Props to David. He gets props.
Oh, definitely.
So speaking a little bit more back to the foundation, there's this pretty awesome project that Carrie Lee Marucci's doing. I think it's WP Photography, where she's been trying to establish and get sponsorships from companies in the WordPress community, and she uses those to travel to various work camps across the world, and she takes these awesome professional photographs. And I look at the project, and I met her actually at Work Camp Chicago, so I got to talk to her for a bit about it. But she's documenting the people of the WordPress community, the people who are behind the software and this code that's running on so many websites across the world. And I think it's an awesome project. And I know she recently published a post where she was talking about the difficulties of getting these sponsors on time so that she could make the plans and make these arrangements to travel to these events. This seems like a project that would be perhaps perfect for the WordPress Foundation to support in some way. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and she actually reached out to me. I forget whether it was email or Slack or something, so I have taken a look at it. I think that in terms of, you know, by default with WordCamps, we try to be very frugal and lean, so local photographers, like people who are nearby, is probably still going to be our default for the foreseeable future, versus one person, you know, going around to all of them, which has a lot more, if nothing else, cost and time associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
She had also had some ideas around like a WordPress.photo or something, sort of like a centralized place for all of these. That's interesting. I don't know if it's something that's a good fit for the foundation or if it's something that can't be filled other ways, like tags on Flickr or other things like that. Most WordCamps usually do a gallery afterwards. But I like the intention and the spirit, and I think that she's really, you know, the sort of generosity and passion that she brings to the events and what she does is kind of infectious, and that's definitely something I appreciate and think I love to see in the WordPress community.
Well, I'm not one for photographs. I don't like having my picture taken. Never have. That's why you won't see me in my high school yearbook. 4 years, because that's when I got married. It reminds me. So, you know, I don't forget when I got married.
Keeps me accountable. We can put you on the spot. What day?
September 15th.
Oh, a little bit of a hesitation, but I'll let you have that.
Oh, my God. I hope she doesn't listen to this recording. Yeah, so I just think it's a cool project, and like I said, she's really good at what she does. I don't like having my photos taken, but when I saw some of the photos she took of me, I'm like, hey, I don't look half bad.
Well, she must be a miracle worker then.
I never
just giving you a hard time.
I never get tired of your sense of humor, which is. I'm about to throw you a hardball. I can't have you on the show without throwing you some hardballs. And this is, what I'm about to bring up, kind of makes me uncomfortable to talk about, I'm going to admit. Usually I don't even get uncomfortable talking to you about anything, but this subject I do for whatever reason. And I want to preface it by saying that back in 2010, and you remember this quite well, but it was quite the year for the WordPress community because it's when so many of us discovered, heard, and read and listened about this thing called the GPL, which is a license that WordPress is licensed under and provides all these awesome freedoms that everyone gets to enjoy who uses WordPress, or at least everybody should be able to get to enjoy. And you had this debate with Chris Pearson, very heated debate, over whether or not the thesis team violated the license. And things eventually calmed down for a few years, but almost exactly a year ago today, I discovered, in fact, the WordPress community at large discovered that you had purchased the thesis.com domain and it redirected to themeshaper.com. And I looked at this and I thought that this type of event kind of opened scarred wounds, and the community found itself once again in the middle of a heated debate between you and Pearson. And the thing that is I've been scratching my head over and I'm losing whatever hair I have left is the simple question is that after everything you two and the WordPress community have been through, why would you have anything to do with that domain?
I think that there's, you know, this has been an interesting issue, and it's also, I believe, currently in the courts. As you probably know, Chris went back on his sort of usage. You know, he was GPL licensed for a while, and he went back sort of quietly to undo everything he had said about the GPL and kind of switched his code to violate the GPL license again. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I think at one point he was split licensed, or he was at least sort of kind of GPL, but I did not know. And I got to tell you the truth, after a few years after 2010, I pretty much ignored or didn't realize anything Chris Pearson was doing over there.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably not a bad thing to do. His Twitter recently has been all like Trump stuff and everything, but you know, it's in the courts right now. There are some issues around his trademark and lots of things. The issue with the domain was actually resolved by a third-party arbitration panel that found that there was no violation of the UDRP and all that sort of jazz in terms of the ownership of the domain. In terms of going forward, obviously, and I've said this before, Chris is a talented guy in many regards, and his theme, you know, is used by a number of people. And I think that, you know, he's built an entire business on a WordPress code base, on the WordPress community, on sort of this generosity that at this point tens of thousands of people put out there to build what we know and think of as WordPress. And that's what enables his market, his everything. I think that would be sort of the right thing to do, to respect the license and the framework which all those people contributed and worked under, and that sort of built the thing that enables him to build the thing, you know?
So do you understand the perspective that so many of us in the community had that see this, the purchase of thesis.com, as a vindictive move that's just part of a bitter rivalry between you two? I mean, that's what a lot of people came away with when they discovered that you had made this purchase.
Sure, absolutely. Now, that said, I own thousands and thousands and thousands of domains. I think of them like real estate in a lot of ways, and could be an interesting one to use for future projects. You know, for example, I'm an investor in student.com. Perhaps that could be interesting to them. So there's lots of reasons to have it that have nothing to do with just generic term, which is, let's remember, they're was a thesis before Chris's theme existed, and there will be many theses after it's gone. So you know, this is kind of a generic dictionary word. I have been known to poke and have fun and make jokes, and in fact, I think the initial public recognition of the domain was me making a joke on stage. It was it WordCamp US or WordCamp SF or something?
Yeah, it was at WordCamp. I believe it was WordCamp San Francisco where you said something to the effect of, hey, go visit thesis.com. You may see where it redirects to. And Theme Shaper. And, you know, I guess you could sort of scold me a little bit as a journalist that I didn't discover this until months after. Like, it went over my head.
Yeah, you should watch closer. I mean, David definitely saw that. But I think that it was kind of a joke. I don't think it was harming his business at all. His domain, DIY Themes, doesn't even have thesis in it. I think that very few people ever type that in, and if they are, they certainly aren't looking for his theme. You know, we weren't having anything on the site or promoting it or really doing anything with it. So it's kind of a harmless joke that was then escalated to the legal system. And as you know, like, I try to stay out of legal stuff as much as possible. Sometimes not successfully, but you know, I don't think that it's the best realm to resolve anything. You know, he could have sent an email or sent a note or pretty much anything before he initiated the legal proceedings. But he didn't, and so it kind of ended up in this whole thing. And in fact, it could have all been resolved privately, except the sort of settlement that we had offered, he didn't accept. And then once the court ruled in our favor, he was kind of stuck out there. I will never start a legal battle, but I'll always finish one. So I think that's just necessary to do with how the system works.
So it's going back to 2010 when you had that infamous interview on Mixergy with Andrew Warner, when it was Chris Pearson and you, and pretty much the conversation ended with Chris Pearson pretty much saying, sue me. And at that time, so many of us thought, well, here we go. We're finally going to have a court case. And it didn't happen. And now 6 years later, under sort of some different circumstances, we do have an active court case going on. It's sort of in arbitration right now.
That's actually one of my favorite interviews ever. Don't call it infamous. but yeah, unfortunately, it's not a GPL case, which, you know, I'd be happy to put all of the resources at my disposal towards. But, you know, at the time, I think that he made the correct decision that there was no chance in the world he would win that. And, you know, hopefully that sort of, I don't know, this is actually under completely different issues, completely different everything. Mm-hmm. And I can't talk about it too much since it's kind of active in the systems. But, you know, I will say that I still believe extremely strongly in the GPL. I think that, you know, the communities that were GPL-based that did not fight for the GPL have largely faltered. You know, if you look at some of our open source compatriots that have sort of abandoned both the word and the spirit of the GPL, they're not doing too well. And so I think it's actually super important that for the, you know, multi-decade future of WordPress as an operating system for the internet, as a platform that enable people to build things far beyond what we have today, that we really fight to protect this. And I would say it's one of the things that we should be pretty strong about. You know, it's kind of like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Like, it's one of our fundamental freedoms that every person in the WordPress community has. And anything we can do to protect that, we should. And personally, anything I can do to try to protect the GPL and therefore protect all of the users of WordPress in the world, I will take and fight to my dying day.
Now, I know during the question and answer session, Brian Krasgaard asked you, because you like to think of WordPress in decades. I know this because you said so on stage. But he said, in a grandiose vision, in 10 years, what's the one thing that won't change in WordPress? And what did you say?
Open source.
Open source and the license. It will always be GPL. That's what you said. So speaking at WordCamp Europe, some pretty interesting things came out of that conversation. In particular, one of the last questions that was asked of you, in fact, by an employee who works at Google, talking about how new websites they detected online were using WordPress sites, were using desktop themes, and they didn't work so well with responsive. And I think maybe the question was to you, should responsive be a requirement in order for a theme to be approved and then theme directory? And you agreed that, yeah, it should be a requirement. So with that
That wasn't the question, actually. It was, the question was, you know, what can or should WordPress do given this fact that so many of the sites out there are not responsive. Now, that said, I'd love to see some of, I think the woman was from Google, I'd love to see some of the data they have, because maybe there's some other patterns there in the data that we can work on. I mean, maybe they're on old versions. Maybe they don't run Jetpack, which has an awesome mobile feature. You know, there's all sorts of things. I'm guessing you're going to talk about accessibility next.
Are you in my Google Docs, G?
What's going on?
I don't understand. How did you?
It's like very well, the next well done.
Very well done.
So should accessibility be a requirement for the theme directory?
Yes, because I follow quite a few accessibility people online, and when they heard this, that was their first question. Like, okay, responsiveness can be a requirement, but accessibility is not yet a requirement, and they always get a little upset. They voice some anger that it's not a requirement yet. It's just a thing that people kind of still have the opportunity to do if they want to. It's not forced.
Yeah, and so there's a few interesting things caught up there. One, in that a very universal sense, responsiveness is accessibility to people on a non-desktop, which is literally billions of people coming online, and that might be their only form of accessing the internet. So serving them better, I think, is very much in the spirit of what Accessibility Group and myself and everyone fights for and works on. The second is that particularly around what would a requirement for something to be accessible mean? I think there's a lot more flexibility with responsiveness than there is for a requirement I could imagine around accessibility. The reason, part of the reason for this, and again, I am an incredible novice at this space, and there's many folks in the WordPress community who understand this far better than I. But typically when we talk about accessibility, how that practically manifests itself is through specific clients that you might use if you, say, had a motion impairment or were blind or things like that. Something that makes it more difficult for you not to use, say, a regular web browser or using a web browser that's enhanced with an accessibility technology. Now, many of these clients have limitations that I think are ephemeral and aren't worth necessarily building every single thing against. Now, that said, I think that what we can do and what we already do to some extent is make, you know, sort of incentivize and reward people who do build in, let's call it, the checkbox of accessibility. And that's such a misnomer because it's never a checkbox. Like, it's really a process, not something you can say this is accessible or not. Like, the people who build that in, I think we can highlight those sorts of things and reward those sorts of things. And more importantly, make it possible that people who, for whom that is important, can filter by that as a requirement, or not a requirement, a requirement to them. And by the way, this isn't just themes, it's plugins too, you know? For WordPress core, it's absolutely something that we can target and work really hard on. That takes a team, though. It's not easy. I'm not sure if necessarily if we said this is a requirement. One, if it's something the theme review team would even be able to properly assess. And two, if it would actually help, you know, versus more of a carrot than a stick approach, which is what I'm describing through tagging and search and things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I've heard you say that before, that accessibility shouldn't just be looked at as a checkbox.
Yeah, and I probably messed up like two or three things there. Like I said, this is not like an area which I'm a world expert. It's why we have, you know, a whole team on the WordPress side that is super savvy on these things and passionate about it and really helps drive it forward, particularly in WordPress core.
And to remind people, there is actually a major development in terms of accessibility for WordPress core, where earlier this year, I think it was back in February, the WordPress accessibility team announced that all new or updated code released in the WordPress core and bundled themes must conform with the WCAG 2.0 guidelines at level AA. So that was actually a huge accomplishment, and a lot of applause all around from the people I follow who are into accessibility.
You know, it takes a village. I think that there's, you know, that team being ultra passionate about these issues and working on that as their contribution is more effective than if they were just trying to go around and say, you must do this, you must do this, you must do this, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes we need some help to do it. And that's really the beauty of open source, is that it's a duocracy. Like, the people who show up and do things, that's what happens. And I would say that team has very much shown up and done things in a way that should serve as an inspiration for anyone else who, you know, wants to affect some change in the WordPress code base.
So for those listening out there, Matt, what is the easiest way for somebody that's got a WordPress site to enable accessibility on their site? Is there anything specific that they have to do, or plugins, or what's the best route in order to do that?
Yeah, I would say that if it's for your site for visitors, it does depend on your theme. Every default theme, I believe, is fully accessible. So from 2010 on. So we've been doing this for 6 years now. And certainly any new ones will be. Other than that, I would say, you know, ask whoever developed your theme if it is. Right. Or if it's in the directory, maybe look for tags, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and for those interested, if you visit make.wordpress.org, the accessible website, there's actually, I think there might be a handbook or the core. Yeah, there's an accessibility handbook that the team was working on that includes all kinds of useful information on people wanting to learn more about how to make their sites more accessible.
There's also the accessibility channel in WordPress's Slack, and I bet if you went in there and said, hey, I'm passionate about learning more about this. You know, here's XYZ, how do I tell? Or ask that very same question, that there's a bunch of people in there who'd be excited to help you, particularly if it was framed in a way that this is something you want to help plugins and themes and all your own developments with.
Yeah, I've actually witnessed this this type of collaboration in person, where we were hanging out together on a hangout, much like this one, a group of us from the WordPress community, and we had one person on. I think it was can't think of her name off the top of my head, which she might wring my neck for it, but she was very big into accessibility, and someone else was working on the project, and she volunteered to look the code over. To give them pointers on where it could be accessible, and turns out that the product ended up being way more accessible than had he not collaborated with her. So it was pretty cool to see that collaboration. It was just a matter of him asking, and there's plenty of people that if you ask, there's a lot of people in the community who are more than willing to give you the time to improve your product. That's one of the special things about the WordPress community that I've noticed.
Totally.
So at WordCamp US, you said you were going to lead the release of WordPress 4.7, but a few weeks ago you announced that Helen Husandi was going to take your place, and this would be her second release cycle that she would lead. So mm-hmm. What happened? What's going to take up so much of your time that you won't be able to lead WordPress 4.7?
You know, that was kind of directly after my family stuff.
Ah, okay.
So it was really just, you know, this year has a lot going on.
Right.
And I didn't want to add that as something on it. So my mind space has really been, I've been spending a lot of time in Houston, spending a lot of time with my mom and sister, and that's kind of top priority.
Completely understandable.
So that combined with everything going on automatic, everything, you know, there's a lot going on as well.
And you're learning JavaScript deeply.
Yes, and I'm learning JavaScript deeply. So I think I still really want to lead a release. Who knows, maybe even the one after Helen. Although she's a tough act to follow. But I was actually really excited that she was able to do it because, you know, I'm a big fan of hers and her work, and excited to see what this release will hold.
Marcus, you have up to this point, you got any questions on your mind, at pressing questions you want to ask Matt while we have the opportunity?
Well, I just wanted to – we didn't get a chance to talk to you since the Kim Parcell scholarship was announced, and I thought that that was a great way to kind of remember her and provide others that were in similar situations, I guess, as Kim, a chance to attend WordCamp. And it's interesting because, I mean, Jeff especially had a pretty close connection with Kim.
Yeah.
And at the time of her passing, we had even debated on the show whether the next point release should be named after her or, you know, something like that. But then this seemed to be the best solution that could stand the test of time. And, you know, unfortunately, as time goes on, that there will be more deaths of prominent people. I mean, is this something that we expect maybe a trend to continue with, or is it just circumstantial, depending on who it is?
I think that, you know, my personal thoughts, that scholarships are a great way to remember someone, you know? And hopefully the person who receives the scholarship, you know, feels a connection and digs in a little bit into the person who it's named for. And that, you know, when someone passes, you know, they do keep living on in our memories and our actions and their influence on us in so many ways. And I think it's a great way to honor them by remembering. Now, in cases, yeah, if God forbid something like that were to happen again, and that person's family was supportive, you know, I think that's also really important that the people closest to whoever the pass are really the most important. You know, their family is going through things none of us can imagine and that are very unique to them, and that aren't the same as when we went through it or someone else went through it or anything. So first and foremost is respecting their wishes. But if part of one of their wishes is that we can help remember them through a scholarship, you know, I'd love to see more of those.
Great. Next, I wanted to ask you about WooCommerce And how has the progression been going since the acquisition? Have there been new initiatives, new projects that have been championed? Can you give us sort of a status update?
Yeah, well, I guess we're almost exactly a year.
Mm-hmm. No, we're just past a year.
Yeah, a little past it.
I mean, it's a lot of folks at Automattic who have experience at many other large companies. And it was pretty universal that they haven't seen an acquisition go as well as this one has. I think that a lot of it is just that Automattic and Woo's culture was pretty close, you know, a lot of ways, and that we believed in the same things. And just like if you were going to marry someone, like you want to make sure that you believe in the same things at the end of the day.
Right.
We do. And we had a lot of the same type of people. You know, the biggest change in the past year has been we've been able to add, I think, just under 30 people to the team. And a lot of those in support and development. You know, Woo didn't have that many developers working on it, which was really impressive. And then, you know, support had been, well, it still is, not as responsive as I think anyone would hope. So a lot of it was just that they grew so fast that they were kind of behind a little bit of their growth rate. So we've been able to point kind of the Automattic hiring funnel at Woo, and the team's now over 80 people. So it's grown a lot in just the past year, and we plan to sort of continue that. There's about 15 developers now. So I think actually a few more than that. So it's been pretty cool to watch. They're actually doing, the Woo team is doing their final Woo trip next week, the week after that in Berlin. So I'm very excited to, I won't be able to make it in person, but yeah, I'm going to video in, and a few other of my closest colleagues will be there. So it's very cool to see like the team come together, grow with an Automattic, and take on some problems. You know, they're working on some stuff that is, I think, very, very ambitious. And if and when it goes well, more when it goes well, I think we'll have a big impact on the e-commerce world in general, not even just the WordPress e-commerce world.
Well, one of the biggest announcements to come out of the most recent WooConf, which is a conference all about WooCommerce, just a pretty cool event in and of itself, was this thing called WooConnect. And is it oversimplifying by saying it's going to be the Jetpack for e-commerce?
Well, if you consider Jetpack to be simple, yeah.
That's up for debate.
No, but I think the idea is similar in that there's things we can do. You know, at this point, Automattic has a decade of building web-scale cloud services that are rock solid, that, you know, scale to tens or hundreds of billions of requests per day at this point. Like, you know, we have, and I forget the exact number, it's kind of like 15 or 20 data centers all over the world to make things super fast, like Photon. Like, we're getting good at this stuff. And, you know, there's certain things in WooCommerce I think are still pretty tricky. I don't know. Have you ever set up a Woo store?
I've personally have not. I may have installed the plugin once or twice, but I've not set up an actual store or performed any commerce through it. But I know Marcus has actually worked with WooCommerce before.
Tons of times. And in fact, I set up a brand new store yesterday with the membership and subscription extensions added in, and they worked great. They work well together. They play nicely. They do everything that I ask them to do, and they don't get in the way. Otherwise, it's a good system.
Yeah, so how did that install go, and how would you say it was different from, let's say, a year ago or a year and a half ago?
Well, this is the first time that I've actually used the subscriptions, and it did seem better in terms of the product setup and having everything there in the side tabs where I can just navigate downward and set up all the different parameters, and the rules is nice with the membership module, and subscriptions was great. I mean, it basically said, okay, what product is it that they're going to get a subscription to, and what membership level does that give them? So it worked exactly as planned.
I'm really glad to hear that. I will say that team is working really, really hard. You know, there's a lot of work to do still, so I don't think that I mean, you're obviously a pretty savvy WordPress user, right? So I don't think that it's to the level yet where just someone completely new to WordPress will find it very intuitive. But I think we can get there. And I kind of accidentally announced from stage at WordCamp Europe, but we're working on a React interface for WooCommerce, mm-hmm. as well as Jetpack. So we're kind of taking a Calypso-like approach to both simplifying, streamlining, and speeding up all the interfaces and all the plugins that Automattic works on. And I'm excited to see what comes of that. In fact, I heard that, Jeff, you're actually using the WordPress.com desktop app. True?
Okay, yes, true. So at first, I didn't think I would like the workflow of having a separate window. I preferred having the WordPress editor in my tab, in a browser tab. But in the past couple of days, or I'd say within the last week or two, I've been using the WordPress desktop app on my Mac, on the MacBook Pro, and I'll write the post in there because it's right there. I can read the article. I can type stuff in. It's all right there. I don't have to keep switching tabs. And then I'll just go to the WordPress editor at the very end just to double check, make sure there's no spaces, and end up do the publishing from there. But I'm being won over by the desktop app, and it's actually being starting to be a predominant way I write articles now on the MacBook.
That is awesome. I would say that that's also, kind of our method of winning you over. Like, we'll continuously iterate and try to make things better until it's just undeniable that it's, like, something you got to use. And, we've had, since it was released, I don't know how many iterations on the desktop app. And, of course, it embeds Calypso directly. So there's some cool stuff coming around the corner there. So keep an eye on it.
Yeah, the only thing I would have as far as direct feedback is sometimes when I see an update, it gives me this miniature version of a changelog where it just says security fixes. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess I don't know what they're fixing, but it must be good, so I install the update. So I don't know if there's a way to provide maybe more detail or a link to actually know what it is that changed, but that's really it. I mean, what I do appreciate with the desktop application is how fast it is. It's amazingly fast compared to the actual WordPress backend post editor. I'm amazed.
Yeah, and it's actually going to get faster still. Like, there's still some things that we're working on that will make it even faster. But there's some clever stuff. So, for example, WordPress.com and Calypso now, when you hover over or move your mouse towards a menu item, it'll start loading that in the background. So by the time you click it, it's already loaded and is super, it kind of instantly comes out there. And we're working the data models in Calypso to use Redux so we have a consistent data store throughout everything. But I mean, part of what's tricky about the desktop app is it is Calypso, so which is fully open source, but at this point has had 9,900 commits, so just under 10,000 commits since we made it public, which was in, when was that? October, November?
Yeah, sometime last year, somewhere around WordCamp US, before WordCamp US last year.
Yeah, so think of that. Close to 10,000 commits in just the past 7 or 8 months.
That's a lot of work. I mean, no wonder every time I open it, there's a new update.
Well, the desktop doesn't update as frequently. So, what updates constantly is WordPress.com itself, and then we kind of package it up for the desktop version.
Gotcha.
I actually have a Calypso question from a listener that I'd like to ask.
I hope I can answer it.
It comes from Courtney Robertson. She's from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. And I'm just going to read it verbatim. I'm wrapping my head around plugins for Calypso, plugins that enhance using Calypso, but also how Calypso will allow us to use repo plugins on self-hosted sites. Thinking specifically about Yoast here. I'm guessing if it'll work on desktop apps, it'll work on mobile WordPress app too. Does Matt have any ideas if that's on the list soon? What other implementation examples might you envision? What are the technical challenges in making that possible?
That is a long question, but also an excellent one. So thank you very much. So plugins for Calypso is not yet. So I'd say that, I mean, part of what we're doing there is just really trying to get that core experience really killer. So if I had a guess, and sometimes the team definitely surprises me by get into things sooner than I would have expected. If I had a guess, I would say that plugins are more of a next year thing. Now, that said, you know, if Yoast wanted to, they could make their own custom version of Calypso. Like, all the code is out there. So they could make, like, a Yoast version of Calypso that then they distributed and people could run and be fully integrated. So one thing that is exciting that's coming, I can't really leak anything with Calypso because, again, it's all open source. So if someone were savvy enough to watch all the change logs and pull requests and everything. But, you know, there's some custom post type support coming. So that should help with a lot of things.
Wow. That's cool.
There you go. So Matt, are you ready for the second hardball of tonight? I got another hardball for you.
I saw you say you had a bunch of hardballs, and I haven't felt one yet. So,
hanging inside right there.
Yeah, here we go. All right, so earlier this year, the WordPress recommended hosting page was revamped, which for the first time actually includes a great company, Flywheel Hosting. Which is relatively new in this space, but everyone I've talked to and all the social media channels I watch, Dusty Davidson and the group over there are doing a fantastic job with Flywheel Hosting. So I think it's they totally deserve that spot. But I wanted to ask you, why do you think any changes to this page generate so much controversy? Is it because there's millions of dollars at stake, or there's conspiracies going on that people believe? I don't know. It seems like you remove something, there's controversy. You add something, there's controversy. People are watching that page like a hawk.
Okay, where's the hardball?
So with so many articles and tweets and people decrying EIG owned hosting companies, why? Why does Bluehost continue to show up on that page?
Okay. All right. So, yeah, everyone has an opinion on this. And to be honest, a lot of people have an opinion on Bluehost. where to start there? Flywheel is a good example. So I've always said that page is editorially driven. I've never even met Dusty. I think all we've done is exchange some emails around them being on there. They applied. You know, they went through the process, which not everyone deemed to do, even though they had no problem complaining about it. But they applied on there, they were evaluated, and like you said, I think they're doing a really good job, so they're on that page. Why is it controversial? I think two reasons. It's a bike shed. You know, everyone has an opinion. Everyone has a host. Everyone has an opinion on their host. Is it a valid opinion? Sometimes.
And those opinions change frequently, too.
They do. Is there value to the page? Undeniably, yeah. I mean, if it's sending dozens of customers per day to these different folks, I mean, that is definitely worth millions of dollars. And so that's one reason why I've tried to shield other people from it, if anything else, like, because I know certainly people have tried to bribe me before. Now, they're barking up the wrong tree. Like, I've been very successful. I'm not very easy to bribe. But I think that it's a lot of pressure on anyone who is a decision maker for that page. So it's why I've always said, you know, it's completely arbitrary, just my opinion. Now, of course, it's not arbitrary. Obviously, I try to make an informed decision there. But it is a reflection of my opinion on if someone were brand new to the WordPress world. I mean, not you, not me. Not Marcus. Like, if you're just coming to WordPress for the first time, where will you have a good experience? And I will perhaps controversially say that you'll have a good experience at Bluehost. Like, I know that there's lots of people.
What's that sound? I hear millions of people screaming.
Not really, because if you look at their numbers, there are many millions of people really happy there. I mean,
so I must be confused. I must think that things are bad, but really all I'm doing is seeing all the negative reports, because obviously it's a lot easier to complain about somebody than it is to give compliments. I mean, we know that.
It's the Yelp problem, right? So, you know, someone who's unhappy is far more likely to talk about it than someone who's happy. And if you have, you know, Bluehost host What are the? I think they've publicly said that they host over 1 million WordPress sites, 1 million active WordPress sites. So if even 0.01% of that has a problem in a given year, which is not that unusual, on a small host that might just be one person. On a big host like a Bluehost or GoDaddy, that's going to be hundreds of people, and they might be vocal about it. So that's something I definitely consider when evaluating the host. Like I read every piece of feedback that comes in on the web host, and I take very seriously when someone says they had a bad experience, right? But then the thing to look at is that a pattern? Is it universal? Or is it something that is kind of within the normal range of mistakes that happen?
So what is your criteria then? As you say, you know, Bluehost is doing a good job. What criteria do you base that on?
I think Bluehost, I'd also put, I could put GoDaddy here, I put SiteGround here, I put a lot of the DreamHost, a lot of the other big hosts, is that, you know, they have in some cases hundreds of thousands and in some cases north of in the millions of satisfied WordPress customers, of sites that are up to date, not being hacked, getting good reviews, good NPS scores, good surveys, good performance. Like, I mean, it's all the stuff. If you look at the questions on the survey that goes out there, it kind of tells you what's important to me. You know, we don't publish a list, but the questions kind of infer things. Like, after the last major release, how many minutes or hours did it take for all of your customers to be updated? What's the distribution of WordPress versions on your web service? What happens when someone gets hacked? You know, we've all heard stories. To me, something that would definitely reflect very badly on a host is if you called them and say, hey, my site's hacked, and they say, tough luck, go talk to someone else, go to the WordPress forums. You know, because we all know as savvy WordPress folks that there's going to be hidden files in there, there's going to be stuff all over. And it's not something that even a sophisticated WordPress user is going to be able to clean up in a way that doesn't get them hacked again. You really need to be a sysadmin, and you really need systems-level access to get in there and clean it in a way that's going to make you actually safe. So, like, that's examples of things. And doing that at scale is super hard. I mean, Automatic, you know, works with Pressable very closely, for example. They're cool, but they're small, you know? It's a very small web host, so they can do a really good job, but with, you know, thousands of people, not hundreds of thousands or millions of people.
Yeah, and
doing
I concur
it
with that.
At scale is much harder. It's exponentially harder.
Yeah, and like for an example, if we had this conversation and we're mentioning GoDaddy as a prominent host for WordPress, people would think we were joking. But they've invested in the community, and they've listened to the developers out there and built systems that, you know, everybody would be proud to use in terms of performance and the rest of it. So it's nice to know that there's at least a barrier to entry to get on that page and that not just everyone can do it.
Well, you got to think about utility, right? So, right. You know, if you're bringing WordPress to millions of people, that's a lot of utility. You're bringing a lot of good to the world. And it's relatively easy to do a good job at a small scale. It gets really, really hard at a large scale. Right. GoDaddy, I think, still has a lot of work to do, to be honest. That's why they're not on the page. But they're headed in the right direction, and I think that they have the right principles. But it's really hard. I think that if you're a host that's targeting WordPress, like, it's a lot of work to train all of your support people, you know, to say the right things when someone calls in. And in some cases, if you're a GoDaddy or EIG, it's thousands of people.
Right.
Now, that said, why do I have a theory for why everyone hates EIG. Do you want to know it?
Yes. Tell us.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would love to hear this.
Acquisitions.
Yeah.
Every single one of them screws up the acquisitions. I will say this, the acquisitions are super hard. And Automatic itself has done a bad job in the past. So where GoDaddy, think of when GoDaddy bought Media Temple and how much like furor that caused. EIG has some really good systems for running things, for doing support, for data centers, for everything. I think that they do a poor job in the transition. So if you're a customer of a small Orange or Site5 or something, I don't think that they handle those super well when they buy something and then switch it over to their shared infrastructure. And
you may have a point there. You may have a great theory there because from everything I've read, like a small Orange or some of these other companies, you'll see from customers all the time that say they've been with the company for years, but the support and everything else started to tank after they were acquired. That seems to be a common thing amongst these companies and customers that I've noticed.
Yeah, and it happened with HostGator. I think it happened with Bluehost to an extent. Remember, Bluehost didn't used to be owned by AIG. Right. But at the same time, you have people who've been Bluehost customers for over 10 years. You know? And so I think that one thing, and I've said this to them publicly, which is why I don't mind saying here, is that they have to work on their sort of acquisition onboarding because it's kind of how AIG is built, is by taking these smaller hosts and then sort of rolling them into the shared infrastructure. I think that the shared infrastructure is actually better than what most hosts have, but there's something in that transition that gets lost, and I think that they probably have a lot of learning and growth to do there.
And that seems like something that you could just initiate and document the first time and then carry that over to the rest of the acquisitions that you get.
Ooh, it sounds easy, but oh man, having been through 10 plus acquisitions, it's really hard. Really, really hard.
Okay.
But I think it's something that they could be good at. And by the way, we're not recommending a host that they just acquired, you know, in the past few months. We're recommending Bluehost, which is really one of their anchor, you know, it's one of their big parts of the business and has been part of EIG for many years now. So a lot of that joining EIG transition was out of the way. I forget when they were bought, but like many years ago.
Well, we moved the site WP Tavern from DreamHost over to Bluehost, and since we moved the back end, we've noticed significant speed improvements, and for the most part, we haven't experienced any issues with Bluehost. So I don't know if it's just a matter of time or if we're just lucky. I'm not sure, but so far it's been smooth sailing for the tavern on Bluehost.
I think something good about a lot of these hosts is that they're getting better about, well, one, I'm glad you had a good experience. there was a point in sort of building this web hosting and cloud infrastructure where it's like, oh, let's put everyone in the same storage cluster, let's et cetera, et cetera. And MediaTimble will very famously like had some really rough time with this because they bought this enterprise hardware, you know, like network attached storage, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. But then when it went down, it took everyone down. And what is I think a smarter way to do it is a very resilient system where you have people pretty isolated from each other in terms of if one server or one cluster goes down, it only affects, it's localized. It doesn't affect the rest of the customers. So it's very possible in this approach that you have some set of customers. Let's say there's 500 on a box, and that box has a lot of trouble. Like, those 500 customers had a bad experience, but the 2 million others didn't. And, so that's just, it's in terms of, like, systems design. I think that sort of highly distributed, independent, resilient design is ultimately better. And some like HostGator have really done it to an extreme. But it doesn't mean that you're never going to have an unhappy customer. It's kind of built to fail, but to fail in a small way.
Right. So, I mean, we have a few more questions with you, but I just want to know from you, how much time do we have available for you?
Jeff, I always got time for you.
Oh, man, that's you're so kind to me. you believe that JavaScript and API-driven interfaces are the future of not just WordPress, but for the web in general. And the REST API, I think, from what I understand, is a large part of this successful future for WordPress. So I wanted to get your thoughts on and tell our listeners, what's the state of the API, and why is it taking longer to implement than what some people may have thought? We know that the infrastructure we have, and then we thought maybe in the next version or two we'll get the endpoints, but it looks like the endpoints are nowhere near ready for a stable release.
I think because it's a really hard problem. And, you know, props to the REST API team for biting off something that, I mean, they're essentially creating a programmatic interface to everything that WordPress does. So it's actually not that different from Calypso from the point of view that from scratch creating, except they're creating a machine interface, not a human interface. You know, but they're kind of catching up to like 13 years of work that's been happening in WP Admin. So it's just, I think it's hard. Like sometimes, you know, something I've said to you a few times, Jeff, is slow cooking makes good eating. Like,
love barbecue.
I think the work that's being done is going to make it way better. So, and I don't know if anyone involved in the process would deny that. That like the API, since I started paying close attention to it, has progressed so much, and it's been like really beautiful to watch. And I think it still has ways to go, but I'm confident about it getting there. So I'm not worried about the if it coming in. It's more of a win.
And one of the things you brought up with when you sort of talked about this with Ryan Krasgaard at your Q&A at WordCamp Europe is you said that one of the things that a really tough problem to solve is authentication, I believe, with the REST API. And totally. Thinking about how WordPress.org could become the single point of failure for everyone using this REST API, and that's a scary thought.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I agree. It's I mean, so much of the beauty of WordPress is its distributed nature. So, yes, if WordPress.org went down, updates would stop, you know, or automatic updates would stop. But then we could bring it back, and I think it'd be okay. But if that were to log into your website or to use an app to post to your website, you know, it becomes a lot more sensitive. And I don't know if that's that just worries me. Like, I'm not saying we're never going to do it. I'm not saying that it's not maybe the thing that's best for users, but it definitely gives me pause that it's something we should consider very deliberately and maybe change how we approach WordPress.org in general.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, I'm not a software developer, but a single point of failure scares me when you're talking about so many sites and so many developers that want to tap into the REST API and use .org for authentication.
Well, it's not just failure. Like, downtime is downtime, but it's not, you know, hopefully it's transient or a couple of hours. What really worries me is security.
Okay. You
know, painting a big old target on the side of WordPress.org and saying that if you get access to this, you can reach any WordPress site you want.
Ooh.
Yeah, like,
oh, boy.
To some extent, I mean, WordPress Jetpack, WordPress.com, automatic is that. You know, we have a huge target on our side. But we have at this point, you know, close to 500 people working full-time on making that safe and secure and, like, watching things. And, like, you know, there's a whole infrastructure behind it, which I know very directly is expensive and difficult to maintain and, like, requires a lot of upkeep. I mean, WordPress.org is somewhat lightweight right now. I cover all the costs personally. Like, it's in the 6 figures, not the 7 or 8 figures per year. And it's, you know, moving that to something that doesn't necessarily have 10 plus full-time people dedicated to it, I think could be irresponsible if we don't take it, if we don't do it the right way. The same way that, like, you know, if you adopt a pet, you know, it's, if you adopt, and I know, Jeff, you love four-legged friends.
Yes. There's one sleeping behind me right now.
It's a responsibility, you know? It's not something you just do because it's fun or convenient. It's like you're really committing to a responsibility that's very serious and very, very meaningful to, like, people's lives or animals' lives, you know? So it's, something in mind.
No, you mentioned WordPress.org, and this question has come up a few times, and I kind of don't know the answer, but you could straighten this all out for me right now. Who owns WordPress.org, and who pays for the hosting and the other costs associated with it?
That's me.
So it's all you personally?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's easy. I know at WordCamp US, you said that customization is the single biggest opportunity for improving the WordPress experience. And I wanted to know, can you expand on this and how important is the customizer in this regard?
Customizer is everything.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I think that the customizer is definitely, like, if I think about lead and release, I could see the customizer being a main focus of it, you know, that it's so important to the user experience of someone new to WordPress especially, but also to everyone who sort of uses WordPress day to day. And it's also probably our weakest area, to be honest. I mean, not, it's had a ton of work. It's so much better than it was. But if you just look at like what the, we're only as strong as our weakest link. And right now I think our weakest link in user experience is the customization. It's not just the customizer, it's also themes, but the customization of the front end of someone's site.
Well, I mean, you referenced this at WordCamp Europe, but and I totally agree with you. In fact, this is one of the biggest problems I had back when I first started with WordPress, where I would come across a wonderful looking commercial theme that I think would be perfect for what I have in mind. So I'd purchase it, give them the money, install it, and be left with a site that looks nowhere near like it does in the demo site. And I would end up so frustrated, I would just toss and consider it a loss. And it, to this day, we're still dealing with this type of problem where it's not easy to purchase a theme, install it on your site, and start off with what it looks like on the demo. You have to actually configure it to look like the demo first before you can customize it to the way you want.
Oh, man. Yeah, you just voiced the frustrations, I think, of literally millions of people who have started with WordPress and then stopped.
Yeah. So what, Matt, in terms of the customizer, I mean, I'll just share a personal story with you. I often deal with clients that want migration from one platform into WordPress. And this was a couple months ago. I had not, in a long time, been involved in a Squarespace site. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we in the community kind of, you know, hold our nose or whatever about Squarespace, but I'll have to admit to you, there were some features in it in terms of their customization that I wish we had, as far as, you know, being able to set things up or change themes around or color schemes or things like that. Is there anything else on the horizon? Well, I mean, of course there's something else on the horizon in terms of the customizer, but in what direction do you want to go with this? Is it just more of an ease of use for the novice or the first timers that first get into WordPress so that they don't feel that frustration? What's your sense of direction tell you?
I think it's for everyone, you know, because All of us edit our sites. All of us edit widgets. All of us have wanted to make a small tweak that ends up taking us longer than we had hoped. I think it's for everyone, and I do believe that, you know, one thing about WordPress is we've never had a not invented here syndrome. Like, we've been happy to take the best of things that other people do or invent or whatever and try to bring that to a wider audience and bring it to open source. So it's not that Squarespace does some good stuff. I think we should be inspired by that and use that to create, like, our own version of what they do well. Same for Wix, same for Weebly.
Post formats.
Same for Drupal, same for Tumblr, same for anything, like, you know?
So I was jokingly mentioning post formats there. Sorry, my bad.
That's all right. I have one more listener question. I got another listener question here. Shifting gears a little bit. This is from Benjamin Intal. He is from Quezon City in the Philippines. And his question is in reference to the 50% domination of WordPress as a platform. And he asks, are there any new hindrances that weren't apparent before to get us to that 50%? I mean, cool stuff aside from just the actual number. Are there any strategies to push this popularity further? He says he imagines a war room like planning session at Automatic. Or is this just an eventual goal wherein it will become 50% by doing the normal things everyone else is doing, like contributing, community things, and such? Just curious.
You know what I can say to that is we actually have a team inside Automatic called Team 51.
Ooh. The cool idea coffee being, mugs and stuff?
The idea being they're getting us to 51%. Wow. Now, I'm not going to stop there, but I think that's, you know, one of the big moves. Well, we've made automatically two big moves last year, like two things where we invested a ton of time, a ton of money, everything. One was WooCommerce, and the other was .blog. And I think that both of those have the potential to bring in like another 5 or 10% each of that market share into WordPress. So that, you know, something I've talked about before and I'll continue with is that there is a, you know, not all, if we're getting to 51% and beyond, it's more than just blogs, it's more than just websites. You know, we need to do stores well, we need to do wikis well, we need to do real estate sites well, we need to do like restaurants well, we need to do like all these different things. That might be outside of what you normally think of as like a core WordPress experience.
Yeah, and with that comes all of those supplementary third-party services. When you talk restaurant, then you've got to interact with OpenTable and perhaps Yelp and some of those other things. And, you know, that all comes with it. And, for instance, I think the biggest advantage WooCommerce has right now that is that there are so many ways to bring content into WordPress. So I recently did a migration of something called PrestaShop, which I frankly didn't even have never even heard of until this client brought it up. I got it into WooCommerce. I brought it into WooCommerce in 1 hour with the history of all of the orders and everything. So we do have that capability of pulling the market share away. I think it's just the awareness of the developers and the designers and the business people out there to sense these other platforms that can be migrated into WordPress and WooCommerce.
By the way, you know something I'd love to see this year? And you know, the best way to predict the future is to invent it, is I'd love to see a Medium importer, a Wix importer, a Squarespace importer, a Weebly importer, like a lot of these newer platforms we don't have a great migration experience from, but I think that we can and should in the future.
You know, speaking of importers, Ryan McHugh, who's doing a phenomenal job with the WordPress Race API, is somehow finding the time to make available to work on the WordPress importer, and some of the work he's done on that has been fantastic in terms of the status indicators and the actual process itself and speeding it up and making sure it works on more hosting configurations. I can't wait till he finishes that up, because one of the weak spots for whatever reason for WordPress all these years has actually been the importer.
Yeah, we've seen that as well. We had you might know Demetrius, often known as Meech at Automatic. He's one of the first 20 or 30 engineers at Automatic, and he's sort of hardcore performance and systems. He spent months on the importer, you know. Really trying to optimize it, but it can be better because to be totally honest, when like we created the WordPress, the WXR format, mm-hmm. like I don't think that we anticipated it to be used quite in the way that it is, and so it's been, but I'm excited that it is, and so it's kind of on us to make it as fast and performant as possible.
And I wanted to go back a little bit to the 51% market share, and I remember you distinctly saying that you were, in terms of the REST API, you were somewhat concerned with the tracking agent, that if how are you going to track sites or applications out there that are primarily API-driven if there's no user agent? And is that something you're still concerned with, or do you know if there's any potential solution to that? So we can track those types of use cases for WordPress?
Oh, I think there might be like a header we can put in that someone already came up with.
Okay.
But I don't want to say it because I don't remember exactly what it was, so I don't want to say it wrong on the podcast. But maybe you can put that in the show notes.
All right, two more questions here for you, and we'll wrap it up, and we'll get to the Marcus's plug and picks of the week.
Sounds good.
And the first is one of my favorite sites that has been created in the WordPress community. I believe it was started last year. Is HeroPress, and it was a site created and is maintained by Topher DeRosa, and there are people from all over the world who participate in submitting some really inspiring essays of how WordPress has impacted and changed their lives for the better. I mean, it's great reading every week. In fact, the most recent issue is from Topher himself. So it's pretty cool. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on, A, have you read that site? Are you aware of it? And B, that seems like the perfect kind of content that would be great aggregated through the WordPress planet, which right now is more like a graveyard than a great source of aggregated WordPress information.
It's a graveyard. Isn't WP Tavern in there?
There's some things going on in the background. whoever is in charge of systems needs to take a look at something because it's been broken for a while.
Oh, really?
But okay, Scott's already on top of it. I've already got my people on it.
I see something from July 5th. Oh, yeah, but I don't see anything recently from Tavern. All right. So, yeah, put Scott or Otto on that. We can get that fixed.
Already done.
And I will say that that's another one of your questions I could have called about 10 seconds in, but only because Topher actually pinged me about it earlier today. So,
I didn't know if he did or not. It was just general curiosity.
I have to take a look at it. To be honest, I can't kind of answer on the fly. I bookmarked his ping to look at it later. So, I mean, do you think it's like planet worthy or something that should be in there?
Yes. There's articles and essays published once a week on Wednesdays from different individuals across the world. And I think if you look into, there's even one or two, I think, by Automatic employees on there. And I think after you read some of the content on there, you'll without a doubt think it's definitely planet worthy.
All right. Well, I will, you know, it's on my to-do list, so I'll take a look at that. And I appreciate your input.
No problem. Okay, so the final question. Now, you're a busy man who leads a busy lifestyle, from what I've noticed. But there are times, there's got to be times when you're alone, when you're able to collect your thoughts. And hopefully this isn't too personal of a question for you, mm-hmm. but sometimes I wonder, what does Matt think about when he has time to himself, when he has time to really sit down and think, you know, what crosses your mind at these times of your life when you're so busy catering to everyone else and you're just doing things all the time?
Huh.
I mean, do you decompress? Do you think about nothing?
I mean, well, that's – so I do try to practice mindfulness and meditation, which is kind of thinking about nothing. I mean, not exactly, but it is interesting that, you know, like coming out of WordCamp Europe, I had like 25 ideas for future versions of WordPress. Like, I was very inspired by the events and the people I talked to. And so that was actually really awesome in terms of, you know, I put it all in SimpleNote, which might not be surprising to people. So I use SimpleNote a ton. Like, my entire life is in there, literally. Usually around the end or beginning of the year, I try to map out my goals for the year, sort of the calendar year, and sort of take a step back. Around Lent, I usually think about what am I taking for granted and I can give up. You know, whenever possible, I try to, you know, because you never know what life's going to throw at you. So, like, for example, I've been spending a lot more time in Houston recently. Which, if you would think like, oh, Matt, he travels literally, you know, past few years, maybe in a different city every second or third day. So, you know, being in one place has definitely been a change, but it affords a lot of other opportunities. So I try to look at the opportunities and everything. So, for example, been in Houston a lot more. I've started taking dance classes.
Okay, I was not expecting that.
I bet you weren't. it's difficult to take lessons of any sort, to be honest, but particularly dance ones if you're having a different teacher every couple of days or moving around all the time. But yeah, and it was partly inspired by WordCamp Europe as well, because I went to a ball on Friday night that, you know, was like Viennese waltz and foxtrot and tango and all this sort of stuff. So it's been kind of fun to learn a little bit more about ballroom dancing this year. In terms of going forward, it's actually interesting. So first and foremost, I would encourage everyone, without a doubt, even if you tried it before and you hated it, to try meditation. It is the one thing I can unconditionally suggest to every single listener of this podcast, of the blog, of everything. I use an app often called Calm, which is also an Audrey company. So it's calm.com, and they have an app and everything. And they do this sort of 7 days and 21 days of calm. That's like kind of an intro to meditation. And man, it's so good. Like, it really makes you so aware of everything in your head and how your head works through the day. And really, you know, because at the end of the day, like, I'm not an athlete. I don't, like, it's not, my success in the world isn't based on how fast I can run or how I can hit a jump shot. It's really 100% on my cognitive abilities. And I would say that probably nothing has had a bigger impact on my cognitive abilities than meditation. Number two would be reading, but number one is definitely meditation. So working on it is really hard, though, and I would say that there's some days when, like, I'll sit down for 10 minutes and just my mind races the whole time, and I can't focus, I can't, you know, it's like almost a complete wash from the point of view of doing what you're aka supposed to do in meditation. But that's one of the beautiful things about it, is when you practice mindfulness, like, you accept whatever happens, even if it's not what you plan to happen. But something that I do sometimes now when I'm having one of those days, and actually this morning was one of those days, is a lot of times for just a given day, I'll have a note card that I work from, like all the things I'm trying to do that day. And I'll break my meditation to write on the note card because it doesn't happen often, but and for some reason, Wednesdays are often the days that it happens. But I'll just, every time I try to return to my breath, something else will race through. And I can't get it out of my head unless I write it down. So I wouldn't call that real meditation or mindfulness, but when it happens, I just kind of embrace it and go for it. And those are often some of my most productive days. So, but, you know, to the answer of what I'm thinking about, I do think about WordPress far in the future. I think about a lot of my family, you know, so how can I best serve my mom, my sister, my uncle, like my extended family. I think about my automatic family. You know, we're coming up on 500 people now. Like, what are the biggest issues there? How can I help them? What can I do? And then the broader web, like, where is the web going? You know, that's much more rare, but occasionally, you know, the web is being created every day. And I think one of the most powerful things you can ever realize is that everything that you use, whether it's your cell phone or a book you read or a road you drive on, was built by someone. You know, and you can build things and you can influence people's experience of the world. And so building WordPress, I try to influence people's experience of the future. And I want that experience to be open and open source and all these sort of values that I think many people in the WordPress community share. So I think about that.
Man,
so that's a long answer.
We didn't even get into some of the other cool stuff I wanted to talk about the major developments of the U.S. federal government, and probably more in effect to the recent announcement of Bulgaria announcing that any contracts they do now is going to be all open, has to be open source. So that's
the best article I've read on WP Tavern in the past month, by the way.
Wow. What can I say? Sarah's your favorite. So,
No. Let Sarah write that. I'm sorry. But no, it was really good. I really love that. I think people should think about more content like that. Like, open source as it's affecting the world, not even just WordPress, because I think that it's important for the WordPress world to know about that.
And we didn't even get into the open web, and, you know, the next time we have you on the show, we're definitely going to talk about this intergalactic planetary data file storage system that you're talking about that has got me all sci-fied.
Oh, by the way, you should get Nason on the show. Like, he's kind of our secret agent inside government right now. Like, I think you'd love to hear some of his stories and things he can talk about in terms of, like, I mean, the Bulgaria thing was such a good example. Like, I believe very strongly that every dollar that's spent on software by government, like, that's something you and I pay for. Like, that should be open source.
Every tax dollar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes complete sense to me. And speaking of open source, you know, one of the first WordCamps, or back in the early days, I remember you on stage, and you said, mark my, well, maybe not mark my words, but you said, hey, one day Microsoft is going to embrace and perhaps move towards open source, and I'll be damned if they haven't been, open source as part of their vocabulary now, if you look at what they've done in the past 2 or 3 years.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I think I'm going to win that bet. I still have like 4 or 5 more years before their operating system goes open source, but they have, yeah, done a total 180.
And certainly they have. So that's Marcus, unless you have any further questions here, we're going to wrap it up with Matt Mulloway.
No, I just did. I wanted to pass along a thanks, Matt, because actually you gave a tip to Jeff, who then passed it to me, about if you work from home and you kind of feel like you're getting stuck throughout the day, just pick up your laptop and go into another room. And
yeah.
That has worked wonders for me. So thank you for that.
By the way, I'll give credit for that to Anthony Bubble, who's a longtime automatician and the lead of Akismet right now. I learned that from him.
Yeah, I've actually implemented that where I'll be working from the desktop, and I won't feel comfortable. I won't feel focused. So I'll get the MacBook Pro, sit in the Adirondack chair outside, and hey, guess what? I'm productive.
It totally works.
Imagine how that works.
Human body and the human mind is so weird.
Indeed it is. So that's going to do it for our interview with Matt Mulloway. Matt, in case people out there, for whatever reason, don't know how they can follow you or keep tabs on you, give us some information.
Sure. Well, my WordPress is ma.tt. My other photo blog is matt.wordpress.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at photomatt, photomatt. And I'm on Facebook as well, so you can search me there.
Excellent. And are there any upcoming WordPress events that you could tell us that you can or can confirm that you're going to be at?
I can confirm I will be at WordCamp United States in Philadelphia in December. I might, you know, drop in on surprise, kind of last minute at some WordCamps between now and then. So keep an eye out. You should just go to every WordCamp you can, and I might show up.
Nothing like a surprise, Matt. Let me tell you. So, Matt, thanks again. Hope everything goes well for you. Thanks for everything you've done for WordPress. And it must have been cool getting to hang out face-to-face with Mike Little again. I bet you love those opportunities.
You know, I think it was maybe the fourth time we've seen each other in person, which is kind of amazing to think about. He is such a good person. You know, I think that all of WordPress was very lucky that Mike was one of the co-founders, because I think that his spirit really lives on in a lot of the community.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think I've ever had him on the show, which I'm going to rectify that before the end of this year.
There you go. Get Mike Little and Nathan. You'll be set.
And you know, because Marcus and I were wondering, like, boy, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall with Mike and Matt in the same room talking about WordPress? It's probably pretty interesting. Matt, thanks again for your time, and we'll have to do this hopefully not within, you know, past 6 months, but get you on sooner, maybe sometime before WordCamp US. Or we'll see.
Sounds good. Or right after. All right.
Or right after. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye-bye.
So that is CEO of Automatic, co-founder of the WordPress Project, and founder of the WordPress Foundation. Again, man, just an action, jam-packed, information-laden episode of WordPress Weekly. What did you expect? I expected nothing less, man. Marcus, what a great time that was.
Absolutely, and he finally earned front of the show, which is an actual bonus.
Very prestigious award.
Yes.
So let's get into your plug-in picks of the week, which I hear you have some dandies.
I got some humdingers, man. There's one that you're going to love. Okay, the first one is called VR View, and it actually gives you an easy way to embed Google's new VR View images right into your WordPress installation. So you can embed a 360-degree video picture, video, whatever, panorama, any of those things that Google VR will do for you. Now, this begs the question, when am I going to actually see the whole dashboard in VR? That's what I'm looking for. So I can design on the fly, literally drag and drop with my actual hand. The next one is something that, oh, I've been begging for this one, Jeff. It's called Attachment Taxonomies, and it actually allows you to add tags and categories to your images in the media library. Do you believe it?
Whoa. Say that again.
You heard me.
These people missed it. What did you say?
You heard me. It allows you to actually, and see, upon this news, I noticed that Matt had to leave too. So he didn't even get to understand that this needs to be part of core, which is that I can put something now in the media library with this plugin, Attachment Taxonomies, and be able to assign each attachment a category and a tag. Done.
That's yeah, that's awesome. In fact, I was just responding to someone the other day in the Advanced WordPress Facebook group from somebody looking for something that does exactly this, because they can't tag images and they can't add categories.
Well, there you go. That's the bonus for listening to this show and hearing the plugin picks of the week. So you got to listen every week and you get these gems like this. And finally, Jeff, do you remember back when WPChat.com first started and how thrilled you were with the discourse forum yes. system? Well, guess what, my friend? WP Discourse now exists, and it nice. Acts as an interface between your WordPress site and your Discourse forum. It publishes WordPress posts to Discourse. You can use Discourse to then generate comments and discussions around your WordPress posts. You can select which comments are going to be displayed on WordPress based on the score of that actual person. And you can use your WordPress site as a single sign-on for your Discourse forum.
Nice.
Another one, man. Boom. WP Discourse.
Hey, you said you had three dandies, and those are three dandies.
Those are awesome. And those are my plugin picks of the week.
All right. So let's talk about some upcoming events, because I think you'll be going to one this weekend.
I am. I'm going to be at WordCamp Orange County this weekend, which is July 9th and 10th. So if you're there, come look for me. Say hello.
And at the end of this month, July 30th, I will be in Oklahoma City for WordCamp Oklahoma City. Of course, that's the first WordPress event for the state of Oklahoma. So I'll be part of the inauguration ceremonies. So that ought to be a great time. And I bet it's going to be like 110 degrees, but I'll deal with it.
Oh, yeah. They're all going to be in a really down there. Yeah, they're going to be in a really great mood with Kevin Durant leaving, too. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I forgot about that. And I hear that you've submitted a speaking proposal.
I did, actually, for WordCamp Los Angeles. So I haven't heard back yet. So hopefully they'll find it of value. But I have a presentation of about four or five different models of membership sites and some of the goofy ones out there and some of the successful ones and some of them you'd think would never ever be a membership site, but they end up making a success out of it. So we'll see if that one flies. That'd be my very first speaking engagement at a WordCamp.
Man, what a feather in the cap that would be, huh?
In Los Angeles?
Yeah, well, just your speaking, first time speaking at a WordCamp.
Well, see, what's interesting, Jeff, is, I mean, you know, I have two WordPress podcasts that I'm on. Now I started a third podcast for the membership coach stuff. And I feel like I've spoken enough. Like, you know, who wants to hear from me? You know, who cares?
Oh, but, and then you go to a WordCamp and you realize most of the people there have never heard of you.
Right, exactly. So I figured I'll throw my hat in the ring and see how I do. I've been doing a lot with PowerPoint and, you know, doing that for the membershipcoach.com site and putting videos together and things. So I'm getting a little bit more comfortable at the cadence of it like that. You know, I tend to work on the fly. I don't even really put show notes together or things like that. I just kind of go on by the seat of my pants on a lot of things. And that doesn't always make for an exceptional presentation at a WordCamp. So I had to kind of put some things together. So hopefully we'll hear back soon.
Okie dokie. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro. That's JEFFR0. Marcus.
It's MarcusCouch.com and membershipcoach.com, and follow me on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
All right. That does it for we're about through hump day for this week. The weekend's ahead. Everybody enjoy it. And until next Wednesday evening, everybody take care.